The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show, the last show of the week. Fast-moving week. Lots going on here at Edstone, back at our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma as well. And as always, lots going on in the world as well. There's nothing like another horrific terrorist attack to show just how out of touch so many anarchists and agitators in the United States really and truly are. Earlier today, even as Barcelona police continued with their investigation in that attack yesterday on Las Ramblas, another vehicle attack occurred in the seaside town of Cambrils. I think it's 60, 70 miles away, another popular tourist destination. Five men, some of them wearing these fake explosive belts, they too, just like the attack yesterday, drove into crowds and injured some people, and their car flipped over, so it wasn't nearly as deadly as yesterday's attack. And four of the suspects were shot dead. The other one died later. And this follows the horrific atrocity from yesterday. 13 people killed and more than 100 people injured when that van plowed into pedestrians yesterday afternoon on Las Ramblas. Another jihadist attack. Again, the others in Cambrils shot dead. But in the case of this one in Barcelona, I think two of them were killed. The jihadists, I mean. And then another one's, so far as I know, he's still at large. Theresa May here in the UK said, I'm sickened by the senseless loss of life in Barcelona. It's a scene that we've seen play out so many times before. This from The Spectator this morning. It says, Barcelona is the latest city to fall victim to a jihadist terrorist attack as police foiled a second vehicle attack in the nearby coastal town overnight. Police have confirmed that 13 people have died and 100 people injured, I think some of them severely, so the death toll could climb. And then it talks here about the subsequent attack in Cambrils. Further on, he writes, Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy confirmed the Barcelona attack was carried out by jihadists. ISIS has since claimed responsibility for the incident, and it quotes ISIS's statement, saying that the perpetrators of the Barcelona attack are soldiers of the Islamic State and carried out the operation in response to calls for targeting coalition states. And so they're coming after Spain for the first time since that horrible train attack, I think back in 2004. Almost 200 people died in that terrorist strike. But it talks more about these recent attacks, so many of them involving vehicles, buses, trucks, cars, whatever. It says a method apparently used in this incident is all too familiar. The crudest of weapons, a van, driven into pedestrians with no chance of defending themselves or escaping. And this van on the Las Ramblas attack was just veering back and forth down this promenade, aiming for as many pedestrians as possible before it finally came to a stop. Over at the AFP, it says an eerie silence pervaded the center of a city that would usually be bustling until the early hours at the height of the mid-August holidays. I mean, this is tourist season. This is the time for holidays, vacations. And then this happens. It quotes one bystander saying, it was a matter of time. It was a matter of time before an attack in Spain, but we did not know if it would be in Madrid or here. He says, this one of the pedestrians who who wasn't killed, he says, from now on, it will not be the same. And you must not allow just anyone to come in, he says. It's not a question of racism, but of keeping order. You're given food. Do not come and kill us, he says. You're given all these benefits if you come into our nation. Don't kill us. And then at the end of this AFP report, I thought it was interesting, right at the tail end, it says a text message spread from phone to phone with a warning not to share photos of the attack. That's what they, the attackers, want. So don't spread pictures. Don't show people what actually happened. And even some of the video footage. I mean, I think almost half the screen is pixelized so that you can't see it. Not that I'm just itching to see the gore and the violence, but I think there were quite a few media outlets last week that were quick to show the brutality of the violence. And it did have an impact on all of America. And it should have in some ways. Even still, as I've been covering this week, you get a major spin put upon it. But now another jihadist attack, and of course the first, the reflex action is to try to obscure the atrocity somewhat and to not actually show what happened because, well, that's what the attackers want, and so we can't let them have what they want. We've got to smear out the actual photos so that you can't really make it out. At The Spectator, again, it says the Spanish national newspapers have been swift to react to the attacks. I mean, they're calling it jihadism. They're saying this is the greatest threat to world peace. These kinds of attacks. It says further on, other countries recently stricken by this form of murder face the same problem as Spain. It brings up the attack in Nice last July. The Bastille Day attack, you remember? Also involving a truck in that case. Berlin, last December, 12 people killed in a vehicle attack at that Christmas market. And then it mentions the more recent attacks here in the UK. London Bridge, Finsbury Park. And now the UK's responded by putting up barriers, protective barriers around these sites, considering whether or not it should carry out more security checks on those renting vans. It's impossible to stop. It's impossible to stop, and you see it happening over and over again. It's pretty amazing. This got some coverage in the States and some of the conservative blogs. Yesterday, this happened, late in the afternoon here in Europe. And so it was covered in the middle of the day on CNN and other networks. But here is CNN. Its initial coverage of what happened in Barcelona and connecting it, as CNN tried to do, to what happened in Charlottesville last Saturday. This is clip three.
But the final point I would make, Wolf, is just this note that in light of the uproar of the last several days. 5 days apart, you have a white supremacist in Charlottesville use a vehicle to kill, and here you have attackers, at least following the modus operandi of terrorists, using vehicles apparently to kill as well. Those shared tactics that should be alarming.
Yeah, and there will be questions about copycats. There will be questions if what happened in Barcelona was at all. A copycat version of what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, even though there may be different characters, different political ambitions. They use the same killing device, a vehicle going at high speed into a large group of pedestrians.
And that's just simply amazing to try to go that far to make the connection that this in Barcelona is somehow a copycat of what happened in Charlottesville. I mean, you can look at all of the actual terrorist attacks from terrorists that really were an extension of ISIS, Fort Hood, San Bernardino, Orlando, and remember how far, I mean, just how the media would bend over backwards to try to prevent any kind of association being made with ISIS. In the case of Fort Hood, I mean, it went all the way up to the president, you'll remember. It was workplace violence. It was not in any way connected to radical Islam. And radical Islam is not even something that you ever heard come out of President Obama's mouth. And certainly the news media, they weren't there within minutes of the actual attack, tracing it to some kind of KKK tactic. Here, in this case, they're not only making the connection, they're flipping it around, saying it's not the violence in Charlottesville that's modeled after what happened in Nice or what happened at the Christmas market or what happens routinely in Jerusalem, but rather it's possible, Wolf Blitzer says, it's possible that this attack in Barcelona, which involved two vehicles in two separate locations, as well as bomb-making facilities, that was discovered, I believe, the night before, and somehow they're drawing inspiration from what happened in those protests last weekend. Well, I mean, maybe it's not even worth getting into. It's evil through and through, all of it. We're living in Satan's world. Satan's the god of this world. Satan is broadcasting. He's broadcasting in Charlottesville. He's broadcasting in Barcelona, in Fort Hood, in San Bernardino, in Orlando, in Nice, in London, in Jerusalem. It's spiraling out of control. It's pretty amazing. Yeah, there was a Spectator piece, by the way, just going back to that that 14-minute press conference at Trump Tower. When was that? I think it was Tuesday night. It's kind of hard to keep track of all these specific days. But this individual at the Spectator said he went and just watched the entire 14 minutes, unedited, uninterrupted. Of course, all of the media outlets have had their say, and they've pieced things together. And of course, for the most part, all the commentators, so many of the politicians in America, they've heaped scorn on the president, President Trump. But this blogger, I think it's a blog, maybe it's a posting at Spectator, in any event, it says here, after watching the full 14 minutes, I found myself agreeing with his every word, it says. I did not find his tone or demeanor unpresidential in the least. He sharply and explicitly condemned the Nazis and white supremacists, unequivocally. He also condemned the extreme leftists who predominantly came armed with weapons to smash up a demonstration that, rightly or wrongly, had been granted a legal permit. All the while, the police did nothing for much too long. Chaos and violence ensued. Chaos and violence ensued. And then notice this paragraph. You look at the double standard. And the media doesn't see it. They don't see this. But it says the media get exercised when President Trump does not parrot their scripts, but they never minded that Barack Obama would not call out leftist rioters and violent leftist organizations by name, as inner cities would burn with innocents watching their life savings go aflame, as mobs would burn down their inner city stores in cities like Baltimore to Ferguson. The Obama administration avoided planting blame or naming hate groups. When a jihadist murdered Americans serving our nation faithfully at Fort Hood, Obama attributed the murders to workplace violence. It goes on and says that when Gabrielle Giffords was shot, the representative. Well, the media went so far as to blame Sarah Palin. But then more recently, when the Republicans are shot up at that baseball field, well, this was a lone act of violence, having nothing to do with the gunman's political persuasion. Nothing. Because he happened to be a Bernie Sanders supporter. But now the president is someone that most people in the United States, certainly on the left, everyone on the left, as I gave you yesterday, I mean, the facts, the figures show this, the percentages of these surveys, an overwhelming majority in the Democratic Party that see him as a racist. As a racist. And so he's being subjected to this torrent of media abuse. Listen to what they said yesterday. This is from MSNBC. This is one commentator who is explaining what President Trump sounds like. Clip number one.
But here's the thing. President Trump is not an intellectual thought leader. This week, he sounded like a bigot who just doesn't get that the white supremacist side lost the Civil War, and we now live in a country that should not honor terrorists who use violence and rape to keep black people down.
That's coming out of the that's coming out of the airwaves every single day. It's going to be nonstop. There's going to be no let up. No let up. Here's another example from the same network last night. This coming from a professor. Clip number two.
There are no statues in Germany of Hitler. As a matter of fact, Hitler's home in Austria was torn down because they didn't want him memorialized in any way. So this is not a matter of heritage. It's not a matter of culture. Would we like to see Jewish students in America going to Hitler High School or walking past a statue that represents that? I don't think so.
That's from a professor teaching some of our young people. Comparing a statue of Robert E. Lee, Stonewall Jackson, and then as President Trump said on Tuesday, where does it end if you start removing those statues? But those statues, I mean, that's just like having a statue of Adolf Hitler, don't you know? There was a piece at Vice.com. Now, I mean, the big cause now is removing the statues. And the title at this website, Let's Get Rid of Mount Rushmore. I mean, let's take down the whole mountain. The original title was Let's Blow Up Mount Rushmore. And they got a lot of flack for that, so they toned down the title. But the article is still terrible. Donald Trump says removing Confederate statues is a slippery slope that could get out of control. Maybe he's right. Would that be such a bad thing? I mean, would it be such a bad thing to go down that slippery slope? And this author here says, fact is, I'm not sure there is any American president worthy of being etched into the side of a 60-foot mountain with explosives and jackhammers. I mean, every single one has at least been partially complicit in horrific atrocities. Here's an American who's convinced that every single president in history guilty of horrific atrocities. He explains that he visited Mount Rushmore in 2015, and it was a wondrous sight on the one hand, and also something that simultaneously disgusted him. He writes, obviously, Washington and Thomas Jefferson were remarkable individuals who helped usurp British rule in America and eventually establish a new empire, but they also enslaved their fellow man, committing special kinds of inhumane acts that should never be confined to footnotes. Unfortunately, that is exactly how those troublesome truths are treated when you face the awesome grandeur of Rushmore, a monument so incredible it obscures the multifaceted nature of these old dudes, transmogrifying them from individuals with a capacity both for greatness and evil into pure American deities. And so let's blow it up. Let's blow it up. President Trump was right to bring it up. Where do you stop? In fact, you don't even stop, not for these types, you don't even stop at George Washington. You go all the way to the United States Constitution. You go all the way to the Declaration of Independence. You rip it up. You rip up those founding documents. Because they were composed by slave owners in some cases. So you've got to destroy them. You've got to bring down the system, just like I mentioned yesterday. And Herbert Armstrong, my father sends him. I mean, they have been telling you this is where it's headed. This is where it's going. It is a slippery slope. It's more like a cliff going straight down. I mean, that's the direction we're heading in, and fast. He says, this is not to say that I'm against independent art and artists representing historical figures in ways that honor, embrace, challenge, and contextualize our collective past, nor am I against museums. He says, what I'm suspicious of are monuments produced by the state which tend to flatten out nuances and turn flawed individuals into tools of propaganda that bolster a kind of religious patriotism. This can be incredibly dangerous for democracy, especially when the same ascendant movement that deifies one set of white leaders sees people of color as subhumans. Listen, Satan is cast down. and the level of hatred that we're seeing right now. I received an email, by the way, from one of you listeners just the other day, maybe it was last night, listening to the programs this week. And he says here, there is nothing that will be done to stop the fall of America. You see, it's off the side of a cliff. It's not even really a slope anymore. The direction has been set. Even our leaders who pledged allegiance to protect this country will do anything and everything to destroy our president, even if it means bringing down this nation. There's a powerful spirit of hate overwhelming this nation. It grieves me terribly. That's from one of you listeners talking about the powerful spirit of hate. You can see it. You can sense it. You can feel it. I was telling the students this morning, I mean, just growing up as a teen in the 1980s in southeastern Washington State, and I can remember all the races that were in that one school together, and just what a different time. Not that there were never any conflicts or differences brought out in class or on the playground or on the sports field, but what a different time. When you look today at the level of distrust and hatred and strife and divisions, whether along racial lines or political lines or ethnic lines or religious lines, socioeconomic lines, there's a powerful spirit of hate overwhelming this nation for sure. He, in his email, he referenced Matthew 24 and verse 10, a verse that maybe we don't pause on often enough, where it says, "And shall many be offended," or "many shall be offended, and shall betray one another, and shall hate one another." That's what Jesus said would be so pervasive in the lead up to the Great Tribulation and the return of Christ. Many would be offended. Many would betray one another and hate each other. This listener says, "I've never seen more Americans clinging towards being offended to defend sin and lawlessness. Not to mention, I've never seen more hate than right now. How long can this be sustained?" I mean, you've heard the clips, and no, it's easy, I know. Well, that's from a far left-wing cable site, but that sort of thing is reaching well over half the country. And now there are those willing to stand up and to fight and to resort to violence on the streets of America to defend their side, to defend their cause, to defend their radical ideology. What a frightening time it is. Thank God that we have the truth, God's truth. I played you those two clips there. There was another one on CNN last night. Another scholar, another professor, another leading educator, right there on television, telling the world that President Trump is lethally ignorant. He's not just ignorant. He's deadly. He's lethally ignorant. He's incapable of even having a kindergartner's comprehension of race. That's on the airwaves last night in the United States, even as dead bodies were bleeding on the streets of Los Ramblas. He went on to say, this so-called scholar, that Black Lives Matter and the Antifa movement are interested in preserving the fabric of America. Did you know that? These organizations, they're actually preserving the fabric of America. They're actually building up the strength of America. You talk about fake news. He went on to say that the president is complicit in the worst currents of bigotry in the country. Because of what he said following Charlottesville, because of what he said at the press conference on Tuesday, He's a bigot. He's the leading white supremacist of all. That's what others have said. Or have stopped just short of saying. A white nationalist, right in the White House. And so, on the other side, I mean, what choice do we have except to take to the streets in violent protest? We have no choice. We have to do this. This is our only recourse. Well, what it gets down to on both sides is our sins. I think if I didn't read through it yesterday, I at least alluded to it. That passage in Isaiah 1 where it talks about the sickness from head to toe. Isaiah 1 and verse 4 says, "Ah, sinful nation, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors. They have forsaken the Lord. They have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger. They are gone away backward." We're going backwards. We think we're progressing. We say we're progressing. We say that if we just destroy the monuments and rip up the Constitution, then finally we can have a truly free and equal society, freedom and equality for everyone. In fact, God says we're just drenched in sin, laden with iniquity. And that's why we see all of these curses coming upon us. Listen to my father's Key of David program from 2014, clip 4.
Isaiah says in verse 4 of chapter 1 that we have forsaken the Lord. We've gone away backward. Everything is backward and upside down. And oh, the destruction it's bringing upon this land. You see, it's not some radical group's fault. They're just leading the way. The radicals and those who are lawless, they're just leading the way. But the fault is in the American people. They're not living according to God's way of life. They've forsaken Him. They're turning away backward and getting rid of the values that make any nation strong and destroy any nation that continues to practice such lawlessness. You see, it's only God that can save America or any other nation. That's what we have to understand.
That's from a program he gave in March of 2014, America Under Attack. It's because of our sins that we're weakening, and it's happening quick. You can look at Deuteronomy, what is it, I think 11 and verse 8, where it talks about commandment keeping, making you strong. And so what happens when we turn into a sinful nation? What happens when we're burdened down with iniquity? Well, we lose our strength. We lose our unity. A nation divided, like I covered yesterday, it can't stand. It's not going to be able to withstand the storms ahead. What about when the attacks come from without? Like with what happened in Barcelona yesterday. What happens when those happen on a mass scale? The New York Times had a piece. Here again, it does just make you wonder what kind of an impact President Trump's press conference on Tuesday is having behind the scenes. Because remember, he got up there and said, look, there's evil on both sides. And you in the media, you don't want to tell that story. You just want to make it lopsided coverage, one-sided coverage. You want to focus in on white supremacy and the KKK. You didn't hear much about that, by the way, in the last administration. Probably because it was such a small movement. 6,000-7,000 maybe. And now it's as if it's the biggest threat in the country. Because as you've been hearing, they're trying to make a direct connection between that movement of 6,000 or 7,000 people and the man who occupies the White House. And so we come back to the institutional racism from top to bottom. And the only solution is to bring down the entire system. Well, again, when you look at the president at least standing up to the radical leftist media, you have seen a little more reporting like this. In today's New York Times, Antifa grows as left-wing faction set to literally fight the far right. And there's quite a few, as I've shown you this week, there's quite a few on the left that are applauding this. They're cheering this. We've got to take to the streets. We've got to forcibly put it down. This movement, the New York Times says about Antifa, the term, a contraction of the word anti-fascist, describes the loose affiliation of radical activists who have surfaced in recent months, actually it's been more like a couple years, at events around the country and have openly scuffled with white supremacists, right-wing extremists, and in some cases, ordinary supporters of President Trump. You see, they're all lumped in together. And you can hardly fault them for thinking that way, given the coverage, given the news media coverage. It says, energized in part by Mr. Trump's election, they have sparred with their conservative opponents at political rallies and college campuses, speaking engagements, arguing that one crucial way to combat the far right is to confront its supporters on the streets. And so it's breathing life into both movements, both sides. It says, unlike most of the counter-demonstrators in Charlottesville and elsewhere, members of Antifa have shown no qualms about using their fists, sticks, or canisters of pepper spray to meet an array of right-wing antagonists whom they call a fascist threat to American democracy. As explained this week by a dozen adherents of the movement, the ascendant new right in the country requires a physical response. See, the new right, it's ascending. The way they see it, it's gaining adherence. And so how do you respond? Well, it requires a physical response. It quotes one of its members in this piece saying you need violence in order to protect nonviolence. How's that for good sound reasoning coming out of modern education today? Graduating from university, the solution here is violence. Violence is the solution. Violence is the only way that you're going to protect nonviolence. It says here, driven by a range of political passions, including anti-capitalism, environmentalism, and gay and indigenous rights, the diverse collection of anarchists, communists, and socialists has found common cause in opposing right-wing extremists and white supremacists. In the fight against the far right, Antifa has allied itself at times with local clergy, members of the Black Lives Matter movement, and grassroots social justice activists. Another one here, a member, is quoted in the piece, saying that if we just stand back, if we don't do anything, if we allow their movement to gain momentum, their end goal is genocide. They're coming after us. They're going to kill all of us. And so we've got to stop genocide now in the early stages. That's the reasoning. It says, in the days after the violent events in Charlottesville, some Antifa members responded with an angry call to arms, saying they could not back down from what they described as the aggressors on the right, even if it meant escalation into gunfights. There were no guns at the protest last weekend. And so what happens in America, where there happen to be plenty of guns, what happens the next time they bring guns to the protests? And this is in the New York Times. Yesterday, I read the Washington Post with, again, another distinguished black professor saying it's time to bring rocks to the fight. We've been bringing or dealing with paper long enough. It's time to bring rocks and to do some smashing. It's time for destruction. And that individual yesterday, I mean, he was talking about how that supposedly has won them so many victories in the past. Really? Was it good for the city of Los Angeles in 92, 93, whenever those riots happened? Or before that, Detroit in the 60s or wherever? Destruction. Desolation. That's what happens. That's what results. Here's the New York Times talking about the Antifa movement bringing guns to the fight. Because, well, those on the right, they're the aggressors. And so we've got to meet force with force. It talks about how that following Charlottesville, this one particular Antifa movement, it went from having, I think, 23,000 supporters, and it got up 4,000 more following last weekend. So they're gaining recruits as a result of these conflicts. And I read to you earlier in the week how the white supremacist movements, they're gaining recruits as a result of these conflicts. It's boosting the membership in both sides. It says, finally, the essence of their message is violence. That's the New York Times. President Trump said it on Tuesday, and everyone heaped ridicule and scorn upon him. And now, a few days later, here's the New York Times. Well, actually, you know, the essence of their message actually is a violent one. But look, we're just responding. We're just responding to violence. I mean, someone comes up to you in a playground and punches you in the nose, you got to punch back. That's all that we're doing. It quotes one member here saying, in the end, that's what it's going to take, because Nazis and white supremacists are not around to talk. They're not here to talk, so why should we talk? They're not coming to these protests bringing paper, so why should we bring paper? It's time for rocks. It's time to do some smashing. It's escalating. A lot of it's happened just in the last 5-6 days. This is at another level right now, a level we haven't seen. Even though there's not mass casualties yet, you can certainly feel, you can see it in the interviews on nightly television, the cable news networks. You can see it in the publications, the New York Times. These are mainstream media publications, the Washington Post, as from yesterday, the Atlantic. These are left-wing publications that are saying, look, this is what Antifa is about. And really, there was not much criticism aimed at them following Charlottesville, because most in the major media happen to agree with them, their cause. They agree with their cause. So they get a pass, because you've got to meet violence on the right with violence on the left. Can you see now how Ezekiel 5 is going to play out? Can you see how this spirals out of control? I played this clip for you yesterday. This is from Mr. Armstrong's radio program from back in the 60s or 70s. Clip 5, you don't have that one? Well, the one yesterday where he talked about how that communism, you know, he was just glad. You'll recall at the end of the clip, he said, I'm just glad that they're in the minority. And as I said, I mean, back in the 60s, they may have been in the minority, but not so today. It's like my father said in Great Again, the radical left has gained control of the government and much of the country and much of the news media. They've gained control. This is all in Great Again. You've got to go back and read that booklet. He says here, what is the left's end goal? And then he quotes Mr. Armstrong from back in the 50s. He says, if it could do it peaceably at the polls, it would, but it knows it can't. So it does stand for the violent overthrow of the United States government. I mean, and now you're seeing statements like that in the New York Times. That's from the 50s. From Herbert Armstrong, and now you're seeing it in the New York Times. Look, we can't do it in the polls anymore. We can't do it with paper. So we've got to do it with violence. We have no choice. My father says, this is what it's all about. It's never been merely a political party. It's a movement to destroy the government of America. So that's where the movement goes. It's all the way through to the White House. It's all the way through to the U.S. Constitution. It's all the way through to the Declaration of Independence. He says, finally, communists first corrupt, pollute, and agitate from within, but their final phase is a violent overthrow of the government. They aim to destroy the system because they can't build another one until that happens. You need a new system through and through. Well, to get back to the big picture, I read to you Isaiah 1 and verse 4, laden down with sin. Laden down with it, just sin-drenched through and through. Well, in Ezekiel 5, this same passage, this same chapter, where it talks about a third of our people dying because of a siege, because of social unrest. God's trying to get our attention. Ezekiel brings that out in verses 8 and 9. Ezekiel 5, verse 8. It says, therefore, thus says the eternal God, behold, I, even I, am against you and will execute judgment in the midst of you in the sight of the nations, and I will do in you that which I have not done, and whereunto I will not do any more the like because of all your abominations. The same message. It's the same message Isaiah the prophet gave. Ah, sinful nation. And then here in Ezekiel 5, the same message, it's because of all of your abominations. That's not a good position to be in, to be going up against God. God says he's against us and that he's going to execute judgments in the midst of you, in the sight of the nations. I mean, all nations are going to see this. They're observing it even now, as I said yesterday. And all of this is the lead up to and into the prophesied great tribulation of Matthew 24, 21, and 22. And you can read other verses about it in Daniel 12 and Jeremiah 30 as well, this oncoming punishment from God. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, like the listener last night that I just quoted from earlier in this segment, you can send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
The Trumpet Daily Radio Show airs every morning at 7 a.m. Central Time on KPCG 101.3 FM in Edmond, Oklahoma.
When the ancient Israelites crossed into the Promised Land over the River Jordan, there was a Red Sea-like miracle for the Israelites there as well. There at Jordan, and God commanded them while the riverbed was dry to take 12 large stones from the center of the Jordan River and to bring it over with them, these stones, to the other side. And they were to make a memorial or a monument that memorialized that spectacular event from their own history You can read about it in Joshua 4. And God wanted them to do this because he wanted them to remember all of the miracles. He wanted them to remember the miraculous hand of God in their journey. And of course, you can see this admonition all through Joshua 4 and in so many other passages in the Bible. This morning in my doctrines class, I was going through this subject of remembering the truth, remembering those truths of old, the traditions of old, knowing your history. Right at the end of the Old Testament, Malachi 4, it says, "Remember you the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him in Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments." Like my father brings out in Malachi's message, Horeb is where it all started for ancient Israel. That's where they received the Ten Commandments. That's where they received their constitution, so to speak. And God said, you better hang on to that document. You better remember what's written there. You better not mess around with it. Read Deuteronomy 4 sometime, where it says there, look, all these words that I've given to you, these laws, these statutes, these judgments, don't you add to them. Don't you take away from them. Stay grounded in them. Stay grounded in those truths, those teachings, that understanding, those commandments that make you strong. Like I said in the first segment, this was the key to their strength as a nation. It all got back to those original documents. It all got back to what God gave to Moses at Mount Horeb. God said, remember, because of how easy it is to forget. How easy it is to forget. My father said on a Key of David program, this was a few years ago, he said, Westminster Abbey in London holds the bones of the men and women who have ruled from the British throne. The Abbey is a memorial to the British belief that a good king or queen can only be made through understanding the history of the throne. He says, history comes alive when you walk through Westminster. No other nation on earth holds such a monument. No other nation has such a precious view of history. I mean, those monuments, that history, good and bad, I mean, it's there for a reason. There's good and bad examples in the Bible. Imagine if we went around to the, must be tens of thousands of monuments in the United States with this impossible standard of, well, he or she made a mistake here back in such and such date. And so we've got to tear it down. They're missing the point, aren't they? History is there for us to learn from. To learn from the mistakes. To learn from the successes. To learn from the triumphs. In the case of the United States, well, you go back to the nation's founding, and you arrive at the Constitution, and you also arrive, I mean, if you have eyes to see, if you know a little bit about the Bible and a little bit about our founding documents, you arrive at the Ten Commandments. You arrive at that Judeo-Christian ethic. My father writes in The War Against the Constitution, this is from 2013, he said, our forefathers believed that if we didn't keep God's Ten Commandments, our republic would collapse. I mean, that's what we're witnessing. We're seeing the collapse. We're seeing the anarchists gaining the upper hand. We're seeing the extreme on the far right and the far left gaining in strength, increasing their numbers. My father says, we cannot afford to take the words of our founders lightly. If we want to see our nation stand, we can't afford to take them lightly. He says it was much harder for our founding fathers to spill streams of blood winning our freedom and to create and establish our constitutional law than it is for us just to maintain it. Look at the sad and pathetic state today. I mean, people are willing to fight for some kind of crazy ideology and to fight against fellow Americans and to fight against each other rather than to maintain that constitutional law, rather than to establish and maintain it. Think about that verse in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 21. It's a memory verse. We go to it often in doctrines class. Paul said, prove all things and hold fast that which is good. You've got to hold on to it. It's not enough to prove God true. You've got to hold on. And God said to ancient Israel, when you get through this river, you bring over 12 stones and you set up a monument. And don't forget about my involvement in your coming into the promised land. Don't forget, God would say to Americans, don't forget about my hand and its involvement in the establishment of the single greatest superpower in the history of the world. This is what we've forgotten. This is what we've forgotten. My father says here, talking about how influential the Bible was in shaping the Constitution. He says the Constitution is a document that interprets itself probably better than any book or document other than the Bible. And yet, as he goes on to say, I mean, we see such widespread confusion about what the meaning of the Bible is today. And now we're seeing the same thing with respect to our own founding documents, our national documents, whether it's the Magna Carta or the Constitution. Everyone's got their own version of what it means. Everyone's doing what seems right in his own eyes. That's Judges 21 and verse 25, as we went through yesterday. God says to you, and he says to me, I mean, doesn't this just underscore how important it is for us to be grounded in the truth? This is what I tried to get across to the class this morning. Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. We've got to know the truth. And if we know the truth of God, if we're grounded in the truth of God, that will free us. It'll free us from addiction, as I covered last week or the week before. It'll free us from deception. It'll free us from lies, from fake news. We'll know, we'll understand the truth of the matter. God says, stay grounded in it. Stay grounded in that truth. Stand firm in those traditions. Stand firm in those values that came from God. Those absolute values. 2 Thessalonians 2, just a couple of verses here. Paul says, whereunto he called you by our gospel to the obtaining of the glory of our Lord Jesus Christ. Therefore, brethren, 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 15, therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which you have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. Stand fast and hold on to those traditions. Hold on to those instructions. Hold on to those teachings you've received. Dig into them. Get to know them. There's so much. There's so many verses, as I rattled off this morning in class, one after another, where God says, I mean, he gets specific with us. These are the instructions. This is what you need to know. Don't add to it or take away from it. Just be strong in the Lord. Be strong in those commandments. Those commandments, if you follow them, like it says in Deuteronomy 11, they'll keep you strong. They'll turn you into a strong nation. Well, there's admonition after admonition, though. Hebrews 2 and verse 1 is another one that says, if you don't give earnest heed to the things that you've heard before, the history that you've been taught, then you're going to let those teachings, you're going to let that truth slip away. We can't be negligent when it comes to this kind of foundation. Peter said He said, the Apostle Peter, regarding his own office, his own responsibility as a minister, after telling the brethren to give diligence to make their calling and election sure, that's 2 Peter 1 and verse 10, he then said in verse 12, I will not be negligent to put you always in remembrance of these things, though you know them, and be established in the present truth. He said, I'm not going to be negligent. I'm not going to let down. I'm not going to get bored with this truth. I'm going to stay grounded in it. I'm going to remain firm and steadfast and pass along these truths to you, you brethren, so that you might be established in this present truth. Here we've been given so much in God's church over the years. I regularly quote and play clips for you from Mr. Armstrong's ministry, from his literature, his booklets, his articles and such, and clips from his radio program. And then you add to that all that God has given to this church, the Philadelphia Church of God, since its establishment back in January of 1990. It's a lot to, as I told the class, it's a lot to dig into and to understand and know. But God really wants us to just dive into it and learn as much of it as we can, to really have a hunger for His truth, to get to know His Word, to talk to Him about it frequently, and most importantly, to live it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, don't forget, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us this week, and we'll see you next week.